Section 4. The Procedure. The setting can be an ECT suite in an outpatient clinic, hospital operating room, or any other dedicated site in an inpatient facility. ECT does not require a sterile environment. Even though scrubs, foot covers, and head covers are sometimes worn, especially in a hospital operating room, there is no need to scrub in or wear sterile gowns, gloves, or surgical masks. The patient must be NPO after midnight prior to the procedure, which is the same for any procedure requiring general anesthesia. Normal pre-op procedures apply, including verifying with the patient the operation being performed, asking if the patient has any questions, and verifying consent to proceed. The first medication given is an anticholinergic drug such as glycopyrrolate to minimize secretions and prevent bradycardia. This anticholinergic drug is usually given 2 to 3 minutes before the anesthetic. Next, the anesthetic is given. Methohexadol, also known by the brand name Brevidol, is often preferred because despite being a barbiturate, it may lower the seizure threshold, which is useful for some patients in whom it is difficult to induce a seizure, and I'll talk more on that later. Neuromuscular blockers are given directly after the anesthetic. They are given after the anesthetic to prevent the discomfort that the patient may feel of being paralyzed. There are alternatives for these drugs. Atropine can be given as an anticholinergic, but some practitioners avoid it because it crosses the blood-brain barrier and can potentially worsen postictal delirium. Ketamine and etomidate are other commonly used anesthetics. Succinylcholine is a depolarizing neuromuscular blocker that is often used, though it results in an initial muscular fasciculation. Non-depolarizing neuromuscular blockers, such as rocuronium, can be given instead. Another option is giving a small initial dose of rocuronium prior to giving succinylcholine, which prevents the intense muscular fasciculations that can be caused by succinylcholine. Stimulus size. The stimulus given to a patient is set on the machine prior to initiating. There are different types of ECT devices that have different means of selecting the energy that is used to induce a seizure. Because each device is unique, I won't go over each type here, but I will go over techniques that are used regardless of which ECT device is used. In the initial ECT treatment, the seizure threshold must be found for that particular patient. This threshold will help determine the energy required for further ECT treatments. While other practitioners may use other methods to find an initial stimulus size, a method that is commonly used is to set the device to a small amount of charge for the initial stimulus. If this amount does not induce a seizure, then the dose is increased incrementally until a seizure is induced. This newly discovered seizure threshold will not be the stimulus dose that will be implemented for the treatments. Stimulus dose is different based on electrode placement. For bilateral placement, it is recommended that stimulus dose be 1.5 to 2 times the seizure threshold. For unilateral placement, it is recommended that the dose given be 6 times the seizure threshold. Electrode placement. The electrodes resemble the grips on a bicycle, with a physician gripping the insulated handle, while the uninsulated end of the electrode is positioned against the scalp of the patient. Electrodes should not be placed directly over skull defects, such as a skull fracture. A conducting jelly is applied to the part of the electrodes that make contact with the skull of the patient in order to have an adequate charge. The electric charge is transferred from the ECT machine to the patient through handheld electrodes that the ECT practitioner places on the head of the patient. Though there are other forms of placing electrodes, I'll only discuss bilateral and unilateral placement. In bilateral placement, one electrode is placed on the temple or pre-auricular area in front of the ear on the left side, and one on the same area on the right side. The charge passes through both cerebral hemispheres and is thus called bilateral. In unilateral placement, one electrode is placed on the pre-auricular area and the other electrode is placed 2 to 3 centimeters from the vertex on the same side. Unilateral is usually done on the right side because most people are right-handed and thus left brain dominant. A charge given on the right brain will still stimulate a generalized seizure that affects the left and right halves of the brain. It has been proposed that if the dominant left half of the brain does not receive the charge directly, there may be less cognitive side effects. There are no strict guidelines that govern whether a patient should be treated with bilateral versus unilateral ECT. Data is not overly conclusive, but it is considered that bilateral may be more effective and quicker to produce results. However, right unilateral can be used in patients who have a higher risk for cognitive side effects, such as elderly patients or those who already have cognitive impairments. After electrode placement, the ECT machine will verify an adequate connection, which may vary by machine type, but involves the machine calculating the resistance. If the resistance reading on the machine is too high, then the electrodes may need to fit closer to the scalp, or more conducting jelly must be applied to have a better connection. After ensuring a good connection, the physician holding the electrodes pushes a button attached to one of the electrodes that initiates the charge. The duration of the electrical stimulus is dictated by the ECT machine and is usually between 1 and 8 seconds. Once the machine indicates that the stimulus has ended, the electrodes may be retracted from the scalp. At the time of the stimulus, the ECT machine will begin recording brain electrical activity via small EEG electrodes on the patient's head.